relationships require motion. That if you want to get anywhere in a relationship, there has to be some sort of activity. Now, what most of the time seems to happen in relationships is that people think that motion means a bad thing, because where there is motion, there will be friction. And when we have friction in our relationships, we get a little uneasy, do we not? And we assume that so long as there are friction in our relationships, that something is wrong. But the enemy is not friction or motion. The enemy, I would say, is stagnation. It's that danger zone in any relationship that it takes a while to get to, but you have left the train station and you're far enough along in the journey that you can't turn back and start over. But you're also not far enough along to be able to see the end in sight. And so we get stuck somewhere in the middle. It's like your relationship grows stagnant. You're in neutral. You're not really growing closer to one another, and you're not really growing apart from one another. You're just learning to deal with one another. Now, we won't take a poll this morning, but if we were, I would guess that there would be a relationship somewhere where you're just in stagnation. You're learning to deal with one another. I hope and pray today that you're not sitting beside them this morning. But that happens in a marriage relationship. It happens in the workplace. It happens to churches. It's that it's easy to be going along for a while. And I know, because it's hard when you're the leader. Anytime there's friction, you get nervous. But if there's friction, that means there's motion. And if there's motion, it means you're moving. But once you grow stagnant, it's a whole lot easier to deal with things when people aren't causing friction. And so it's easy to grow stagnant. But when we get stuck in neutral, we always need something to intervene and push us forward, do we not? We need friction. Friction has this ability to move us. The problem is that where there is friction, there will be conflict. And you and I have not been equipped to deal with conflict very well. It's a shame to me that Christian people and the church doesn't deal with conflict very well. Even though Jesus gave us a very clear guide to dealing with conflict in Matthew chapter 18. But we seem to want to do our own thing, that conflict makes us uneasy, and so we don't want to deal with conflict. The way I think about conflict and the way we see conflict in our world today is kind of like the game of volleyball. Now, I have always been intrigued by volleyball. I wish that in high school they would have had a men's volleyball team. So long as I could have wore different shorts, I would have played. That was back in the day when I could dive on a hardwood floor and come away with four burns, get up the next day and say, bring it on, let's do it again. I've noticed I'm not old. I don't feel old until I do something like that. And it takes me a few days to recover like it never used to before. But what intrigues me about volleyball is that there is always, it's one of the few sports that the offensive team and the defensive team do not share the same space on the floor. There's a dividing line, a net that separates the two. And really, if you think about it, volleyball is kind of violent. Because one side is trying to hit the ball as hard as they can into the other person. So hard, in fact, that they can't do anything with it, but maybe it hit their face, hit their arms, and it go out of bounds so that the other team gets a point. But if they are able to receive it, at least when I played, maybe Faith can help me. Do they still call it a dig? You call it something different. Okay. When the ball is served really, really hard, and it amazes me, I've received one of those serves before, and like it hits me one time and I'm like, sub. But these girls, I mean, they're able to dive. I've seen them one-handed, even in high school, and they're able to dig it out and they throw it up to their team. Their team will what? Set it. And then here comes typically a tall girl. Faith, are you the spiker? I would assume a spiker. Faith, we're going to pray for you because you're trying to hit the ball as hard as you can into the opponent. Now tell me how that's nonviolent. But think about it. When we deal with conflict, this is how we deal with conflict. As soon as conflict occurs, that conflict is the net that divides us. And sides begin to form. Is that someone who believes this person is right you join this team. If you believe the other person is right, you join that team. If you don't like conflict at all, you just sit on the bench and hope it goes away. But one team will make an attack upon the other team. The other team will hopefully make an attack on the other team. And you go back and forth, until someone reaches the winning position and the other person the losing position. And when you end conflict, here's how we end it: going our separate ways. So the conflict may be over, but we're still divided. And that just seems to be the way we deal with it. And the last several weeks, if you followed the story of Larry Nassar, he was a doctor for the Olympic team. He also was at Michigan State. Sexual allegations of the hundreds of women came and testified against him in court. There's a video that's been circulating this past week. He had already received his sentencing, but it was a video of a father of three of his girls who had been victimized by this man. He requested that as part of the sentencing, he would have 5 minutes alone in a room with this man. And judge kind of hawed around, and we knew she wasn't going to say yes, but he said yes or no. No. Give me a minute in the room with that man. The answer was still no. So he proceeded to charge the man in court. Now the bailiffs were able to tackle him before he got there. No charges were filed. He was not held in contempt of the court, although he had every right to be. If you follow the commentary on this story, this was my first reaction as well. He was doing what any good, loving father would want to do. In fact, there's part of us that would even say that it would have been just for him to have 5 minutes alone in a room with him. As a father now, everything inside of me, I wish I could tell you that it was all spiritual, but the human side of me would say, I think I would have no problem giving that man what I think he deserves, even if it meant me sitting behind bars the rest of my life knowing that I brought justice in the name of my daughter. And yet, the way of Jesus is so much different than that. Is that Jesus doesn't call us to deal with conflict by returning one attack for another attack until we hopefully hit a painful enough point that it hurts the other person, either in their mind, their heart, or their soul, or physically, that they just give up. You realize that a lack of being able to deal with conflict is what's led to so much violence that happens in our society, right? Because we say violence returns for violence, is that there's this back and forth attack, 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 and when the conflict is over, we go our separate ways. But this is not the way of Jesus. We should be thankful that it's not the way of Jesus. For when we were so far divided away from God that there was nothing we could do to get back to Him, He did not attack us until the sin went away, but He actually stepped in and was able to bring us to peace with the Father, not by attacking us, but by restoring us. And so He calls us, when we're dealing with conflict, to deal it in such a way that conflict is not a problem for us to solve, such as it is a relationship to be restored. Is that when we deal with conflict, we have to enter in with this attitude that no conflict is worth losing a relationship with someone over. This is the way of Jesus. You know this. You can read the Sermon on the Mount. We read some of it today. This is the way of Jesus. Is that when you're hit on one cheek, turn to Him the other cheek. No, how about I hit Him on both cheeks? He wants my shirt. How about I beat Him up and take His shirt and all His money too? This is what society tells us. And if we're not careful as Christians, we're the ones who sit back and we cheer on even when a father wants to harm. We certainly understand that, do we not? But we fit in so well with culture that sometimes we forget He calls us to be a called out, set apart people who deal with conflict in a way that it's not just a problem to be solved, but we deal with it in a way so that it's a relationship to be restored. So the question is, how do we get there? I believe our text in Genesis 31 helps us with that, is that conflict never happens on its own accord. There is always something that is the cause of conflict. So conflict is the effect, but it is never the cause. So when we go to deal with conflict, we can't just look at the effect. We have to ask the question, what is causing the conflict? This is what Jacob understood. He may have not saw it all, see it all coming yet, but he was able to recognize, wait a minute, my brother-in-laws, they're not treating me the way they always used to treat me. Their attitude has changed. Do you know what the number one cause of conflict is? I believe it can stem from one word. Change. Something has changed. Something we've chosen to change and there's conflict that results. Something someone else has changed for us that we don't like, it causes conflict. Or things have changed that are out of our control. But change will almost always cause some sort of conflict. Think about this. You see, we're quick to think Jacob was in the right, but let's defend the brother-in-laws for a moment. Can we do that? Think about if you're in line for an inheritance and you've been in line for it your entire life and your parents are fairly wealthy. Think about it this way, that your sister marries someone and brings a brother-in-law into the family, and through the course of time, all of the inheritance keeps going to him instead of you. Are you tracking? This is what's happening in the story. Let's hone in. There's lots happening. I understand that. Let's hone in. Is that Laban's sons were in line for the inheritance, but all they saw was that Jacob's flock got bigger and bigger while their inheritance got smaller and smaller. His pastures got greener and greener while theirs went dormant faster and faster. So you can understand a little bit why they might be a little peeved at Jacob. He's taking their inheritance. You can also understand how Laban would be a little upset at this. And this could all be changing and they're not fully recognizing it yet. But Laban gives both his daughters in marriage, though it was through deception, but Jacob was the deceiver, so you kind of justify it and say he got what was coming. But you give your daughters in marriage to this man, you would think that that's price enough for a father to pay, wouldn't you? Much less to watch your bank account dwindle and he go away with it. You see, if Jacob was paying attention long before the conflict ever would have occurred, he could see the change that was starting to cause it. See, here's what happens. When we enter conflict without understanding the cause behind it, we will only do with trying to solve the effect. But when you deal with the change itself, the cause itself, you're saying, wait a minute, this is not a problem that needs dealt with. This is a person that I'm in relationship with that needs to be dealt with. And here's what we start to ask. What would it be like for me to have my brother-in-law steal all that was coming to me? What would it be like for my sons, my children, not to get what they deserve, but for an in-law to get what they deserve? Or what they do not deserve in their inheritance. You see, it helps us when we start with the change that's behind the conflict. So first, check for the changes. This is the checklist for conflict, by the way. Check for the changes. The second would be check with God. Perhaps that should be first, but that doesn't fit into the pattern of the text. So just let me follow the pattern of the text. Is that okay? Check with God. Because when you see changes happening, if there's nothing happening and no conflict coming, you don't have to ask God about the conflict that doesn't yet exist. But when you see changes, God comes and speaks to Jacob and in a sense says, leave the land, I am with you. Now understand, this is an important part. Because God could have told Jacob, you were in the wrong. See, when we're in conflict, the other person is always wrong, and we are always right. But before we ever deal with the other person and the problem, we need to allow God to deal with us. And tell us, and reveal to us what's happening in our heart and life. You know people like this. They never seem to catch on. But every job they go to doesn't last long. Every relationship they're in doesn't last long. They just go from one place to another place to another place. And they never deal with the conflict that's in their own heart and life. As you know, every Sunday afternoon, we have church service for Bell Oaks Assisted Living. You should join me sometime at 2 o'clock. It's the highlight of my week. Not that I don't love you all, but if I ever put up a mirror and you could see some of the expressions I get while I preach, sometimes it's like preaching to the wall. There's no expression. And I know you don't intend for it. I'm just telling you that on a Sunday afternoon at 2 o'clock every week when I walk in there, you know the expression I immediately get? He's here! And I'm like, I love you guys. We can't have church today. You know why we can't have church today? The flu virus is going around. So you know what they do? They cancel group activities so that those who have the virus are quarantined away to get over the virus before they can be around those who don't have it and infect them. You see, there is always a war that is raging in us. It's the war between sin and the Spirit of God. Paul writes about that all throughout his letters. The fruits of the Spirit come after he talks about the sinful acts of the sin nature. He writes in Romans 7 that there's this war between the flesh and the Spirit. And what happens is that sometimes we ourselves are not yet at peace and we're trying to make peace in a situation when we don't have peace ourselves. How can you make something happen that you yourself don't possess? It can't happen. So we check with God and we say, God, would you search my heart? Would you search my mind? Would you reveal anything in me that is not of you? Let me be at peace. And you know the way you're at peace is being at the center of his will. We cannot be at peace if we're not doing what he asks us to do. There will always be conflict there. But here's something we need to know. Just because God tells us to do something doesn't mean that everything will be absent of conflict. In fact, oftentimes when we're obedient to him, there will be someone who doesn't like it. You know what Jacob was getting ready to do? He was getting ready to take all of his livestock from Laban and the brother-in-laws that had been gifted to him, and he was getting ready to leave the land. That was going to cause conflict. But the way you can go through conflict is by seeing the changes that are coming, understanding where the other side is coming from, examining our own heart and life, saying, Lord, am I myself at peace? Because if I'm not at peace, I can't bring peace to a situation of conflict. I'll just add conflict to conflict. But then the third thing he does, he checks for changes. He checks with God. He checks with others. He checks with others. He calls Rachel and Leah and explains the situation. Now, there's a pattern to this. The conversation seems to be about Laban at first and how Laban has treated him. Did you catch this? It's beginning in verse number 4. He tells them about their father's attitude, but every time he says something against Laban, he then follows it with something about God. But God, so your father's attitude has changed, but the God of my father has been with me. Your father cheated me, but God has not allowed me to harm me. He tried to trick Laban by changing his wages all these times. And that's when he goes and said, if they were speckled ones, God would have made his plan accordingly. If they didn't have any speckles, God would have made his plan accordingly. So when you check with others, the conversation can't be about the other person we think the problem is with. The conversation has to be about what God is doing and showing us to see if we are understanding what God is showing us. I am convinced that most of our gossip would have to cease if we learned how to deal with conflict. Because we wouldn't have any material to gossip about if we weren't at conflict with other people. But because we don't deal with conflict, we go home and we vent. No, what did I call it? Do you remember a few weeks ago? Spiritual gossip. Venting. Instead of talking to the person, we want to talk about the person. So what we do when we check with others, we pick our buddies. And if you're in a fight, you pick the big buddies. And you get them on your side so you can intimidate them to choose you to give up. And you say, can you believe what this person is doing? Can you believe how they're treating me? Here's what we're saying. Confirm in my life that I am in the right and they're in the wrong. No. We have to find people who love us and care for us in such a way that they're more concerned about what God is saying and doing in our heart and life than we are about what that person is saying and doing to us. This all has to happen before we ever enter conflict. We have to check for changes so we can understand where others are coming from. We have to check with God, then we have to check with others. I did this a few weeks ago. Charles is my witness. I called him over a situation that my gut told me something different. The problem with your gut is that sometimes it's just your flesh doing what you want to do anyway. Have you noticed that? Maybe you all are too spiritual for that, but I'm still in that stage where I don't always trust my instinct. I want to follow it, but I need verification that this is a God instinct and not a Jonathan instinct. Sometimes I tend to think that Jonathan instincts and God instincts are one and the same. And I find out later that they are not one and the same. So I called Charles and I just asked him, I said, here's what I'm sensing. And I said, I want you to know I struggle even calling you because I don't want this to be gossip. But here's what I know about Charles. He loves me. He cares for me. And he would be the first to nail me to that wall and say, look here, boy, you need to change. And you know what? I would hear him. I would hear what he is saying. It doesn't mean that we're always in the right, but you have to find people like that that will come in. And they're more concerned about what God is saying and doing. Because remember, we're not trying to solve a problem here. We're trying to restore relationships here. The fourth one. Checkmate the conflict. Translation, deal with the conflict. Jacob was doing so well. He was doing so well. And yet he does what most of us do when it comes to conflict. Did you catch it? He beelined out of town. He was hoping the conflict wouldn't catch up to him. Except, conflict always catches up to us. And it will always be bigger when it finds us than when we left it. It's like a snowball. It starts out small, and it gets bigger and bigger, and soon it's so powerful that you can't stop it. We should have dealt with it before it got there. This is the one place that he messed up, I think, in this story. Because, let's just say that he went to Laban and said, God has told me that it's time to leave the land. And when I leave the land, I'm taking with me our agreement of the flock and animals. I understand that there may be some misunderstanding, but I want you to know this is what's going to happen. Do you think, just play along with me, do you think Laban's first reaction is to want to bring physical harm to him? I tend to think that happened because it took Laban 10 days to catch up to Jacob, 3 days to hear about it, another 7 to catch him. And you know what happens when you're dealing with conflict over time? You start out small. And then you're like, you start building and you start thinking, that little crook, he knew what he was doing the whole time. God, you knew what you were doing. But since I can't get to you, I'm going to get to him. And I think day after day, every time he went to bed, he just stirred and got bigger and bigger. And Here's how I interpret the text. Only opinion. I think he wanted to kill him. It doesn't say that. It says bring harm to him. But how else are you going to get all your possessions back? But you kill him. But God intervened and told him, don't kill him. You can read that later in chapter 31. Don't kill him. So I think my opinion, my interpretation, had God not intervened, it would have been worse for Jacob dealing with Laban 10 days later than had he gone to him. And by the way, if you're dealing with conflict and you know change is happening, give the other side a heads up. Give them a 2-week notice. Don't just storm out of your job. Man, that makes them want to just, because what happens when someone does that to us and it's immediate? But when we have time to process it, we can push our emotions aside. And we can say, okay, let's deal with this logically. So how do we deal with this? And I'm going to go as quickly as I can. How do we checkmate conflict? Make the first move. Matthew 5 says that if you're in worship and you remember that someone has something against you, leave your gift, leave worship, and go and be reconciled to them, then come back and worship. Because, watch this, we cannot be at peace with God when we are in conflict with one another. So long as we're in conflict with one another, we can't be at peace with God. And it did not say, oh, this is going to be hard. You can be mad at me if you want. But it did not say if you have offended someone. It says if you know someone in your life is upset with you, whether right or wrong, you, me, we make the first move. But God, nope, just read the scripture. Make the first move. Because here's what happens. I ain't making the first move. Year goes by. I ain't making the first move. I ain't making the move. I ain't making the move. You can make the move. I ain't making the move. You make the move. How many family feuds are the result of not dealing with it year after year after year, and no one knows how to address it now? We make the first move. Why? Because God made the first move for us. So we make the first move. And when we enter it, here's how we enter it. We enter it not trying to solve the problem, but trying to be restored to the person. John and I took a road trip this week. John has taught 23 years. 23 years. He was telling me how he's learned to deal with kids that are acting out or not paying attention. Or he said instead of lashing out, or he didn't use this word, but for the sake of my tie-in today, attacking them, you need to pay attention. You need. He says, here's what he learned. You pull him out into the hallway, and the first question he'd ask is instead of attacking, he interrogates, but in a grace-filled way. This was so profound for me. What's going on at home? How's mom and dad? How's your brothers and sisters? Hey, I know your grandma has been sick. How's she doing? Here's what he told me. He said, if mom and dad are in the middle of the divorce, that kid does not care who the 37th president of the United States of America is. Do you see it? When we make the first move, we don't make it attacking the other, attacking the problem in the person. What we deal with is the person first. We find out where they're coming from. The other thing that we do or can do to help, sometimes we need to confess to them our fault in the whole thing. Even if we're not at fault, we need to open up and be transparent enough to say, you know, when this happened, this is how I felt about it. It's not right. I've had the wrong attitude in this. And I still don't feel like it's right, and I disagree with it, but I just want you to know I've not been who I need to be. Because all of a sudden now, you feel like you're on the same team instead of standing on different sides of the court trying to attack each other. So we make the first move. Here's another tool. Compliment. Sandwich. You remember this? Compliment. Issue. Compliment. And let me tell you, if we can't find anything to compliment them on, we're probably not ready. It may be, you look nice today. We got to find something. Because we're not attacking the person. We're trying to have a relationship that remains restored. So we make the first move. If that doesn't work, this is Matthew 18. Invite other people. We already talked about this. But he says, if that doesn't work, someone's in sin, go to them individually. If that doesn't work, if they don't listen to you, take two or three witnesses. I'm going to group this together. If that doesn't work, take them before the church. I find this interesting because the kind of people that we invite into the situations are people whose greatest goal is God. These are people who have prayed not just for you, but they've prayed for what you may think is the enemy. Oh, how different it is when you take someone before the church. Someone who's come week after week, people know about, they've prayed over, they've cried for, they've encouraged, they've walked with them. All of a sudden, it's not about the problem, it's about the people. And then, finally, look for Jesus. Look for Jesus. Go back and read Matthew 18 this week. It tells you, go individually, two or three witnesses before the church. Whatever you bind on earth will be bound in heaven. Whatever is loosed on earth will be loosed in heaven. In other words, what we're trying to do is get heaven and earth the same. On earth as it is in heaven. And then here's what it says. I've misquoted this year after year. Anytime we gather and we have a small crowd, you know what we do? We spiritualize it. If two or three gather in my name, there he'll also be. Correct. But do you know where that scripture comes? It comes in a passage in Matthew 18 that's dealing with conflict. It's when people aren't getting along. But where two or three are still seeking me, even though they may not be getting along, I will be smack dab in the middle of their conflict. So we look for Jesus. Oh, goodness. Aren't you grateful that He is the Prince of Peace? That the Prince of Peace steps into our chaos and our conflict. And sometimes, if I were Jesus, I would want to take two people and bat their heads together and say, grow up! Because sometimes you feel like a lot of our conflict is just immaturity. Sarah can testify. We've had a few back and forth this week. And mostly was just my own immaturity. And at the time, it seems like a big deal, but you leave it alone long enough and you're like, what was it? And yet Jesus doesn't do that. He just steps into the conflict and says, I love you and I love you. And He's present. And I want to tell you, there are times we can't resolve it all. There are times like Laban and Jacob, you have to learn to go your separate ways. But even after you've gone the separate ways, here's when peace has really happened. When you see them in a public place and you don't dart off into the bathroom to avoid them. But you say, oh, I've missed you. Are you doing okay? I want to tell you this happens in the church. I want to tell you that as a pastor, you grieve over situations like that. And you have to get your heart in the right place. But all you want to see is the best for people. And you want to see them doing better. And you want to be better for it. But being able to go and not avoid them. But even though you've parted ways and you may see things differently, the center of both of your lives is still Jesus. What would happen in our marriages if we were in the middle of a disagreement and we simply said, where's Jesus? Hold on, honey. Where's He at? He's here. He said, maybe we're not in the same page then. We're two or three together. What would happen in our workplaces when there's a disagreement and we say, wait a minute, I know there's another believer here. Jesus got to be somewhere. You know what we'd do? Instead of running away from conflict, we'd start running to it. We'd say, hey, the Prince of Peace is there. Peace is in the middle of conflict. He's not outside of it. I got to get in the middle of this thing and find Him. And then we go from there. Oh man, how different would our world be if we said, where's Jesus in this? For He took our sin upon us. He made the two one and gave us a new humanity, a new way to live.